For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Welcome, welcome to the Three Donation Podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by Snowflake and Jumbo Cheese. And before we get to the goods of the pod, I just want to address a couple of comments that we've received, okay? First and foremost, anything that we say to each other on this podcast, that's me to Hodge or me to Jumbo Cheese or them to me or what have you, is just all in good fun, okay? We're not casting aspersions about people outside in the public. We're here to have a good time and talk football. But when we're joking around, those jokes are only aimed at each other because we have, I would say, long-standing personal relationships with each other that are part of the reason why this show has become so listenable and watchable to, dare I say, the masses around Canada and people that are interested in the CFL. What do you guys think?
The masses is ambitious, but I completely agree, Dunk. This is, one of my favorite parts of the week to sit down and talk shop with you guys and maybe get a few ribbings in here or there and take a few myself, but it's all in with smiles on our face with love in our hearts.
Wait, you guys weren't actually making fun of all of society when you were poking fun? Oh, because I have been. Every time I make fun of either of you, it's also directed at all 8 billion people. No, I'm just kidding. No, yeah, we've had a number of comments from people who are bald complaining about the bald jokes that have been directed at me. I will just say, please smile and have some fun. Being bald is fine. I am bald at the moment. It's great. I never have a bad hair day. There's nothing wrong with being bald. There's nothing wrong with having hair. And if JC and Justin want to poke fun at my bald head, they are welcome to do so. And everybody on this show has a good sense of humor. We hope that our audience joins us in that. We are not here to make fun of other people. We are here to have fun and have a good time. That is what we do. And if we poke fun at our co-hosts a little bit, we all consent to that. We're here to have fun. And we hope that you enjoyed us in having fun today because we got a great show.
Indeed, we're discussing Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke re-signing with the New England Patriots.
Four Canadian players who performed at the NFL Combine.
Former CFL QB Drew Tate joining the Toronto Argonauts coaching staff.
Dominique Rimes giving Red Blacks QB Drew Brown a huge vote of confidence.
And the Saskatchewan Roughriders paying tribute to a former president and CEO, Jim Hobson. But first, CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi spoke to the media in Vancouver this past week and provided an update on the lawsuit filed against the Toronto Argonauts and franchise quarterback Chad Kelly. He indicated the league has hired an independent investigator to conduct a review of the allegations and insisted no guardrails are up for the investigation. Kelly also broke his silence for the first time since the allegations became public, taking to social media to deny the allegations, though his post has since been deleted. JC, you were at Ambrosi's press conference in Vancouver. What do you make of the league's approach to these legal proceedings?
Look, I came away from this press conference with a much more positive sense of what the league's doing and the way they're approaching us than I did going in. And frankly, that's because when they first put out their public statement and they say it's an investigation, I think we all immediately assume that that's an internal investigation and that people in the league who have undoubtedly a vested interest in ensuring that the result is positive for the league are in charge of looking into it. Ambrosi was incredibly clear. This is an independent investigator that they have hired externally, someone who has experience in these types of things, to look into this case. And they have said, go as deep as you need to go. There is no limit to your inquiry. We want a full report on everything that we need to know here before we make a decision. Now, when all that comes to light and whatever their verdict is and how the league responds in terms of a punishment or not, that's all to be determined. We don't know that. And Ambrosi was very clear. There's no timeline here, right? He urged patience. He said it's done when it's done right. So he's not rushing this to any stretch of the imagination, even though I know there are people out there who are upset that there hasn't been some sort of verdict handed down at this stage. This is going to be done properly. And the fact that the league took the steps to get an external investigator, somebody outside the organization to do it, to me was an incredibly positive sign. The other thing that Ambrosi really stressed at the start of that press conference was the timeline here, because I know a lot of people online, our last podcast came out just as the league was making its first official statement on its social media channels. A lot of people were upset that an investigation took a week to be launched. He was clear, that's not the case. The league learned about it on the Thursday with everybody else when Rick Westhead reported this news. The Argos informed them slightly before that. And the steps were taken, an investigation was decided on before they left that night. The following day is when the investigator was hired. It just took that many days with the weekend and people not working for all the parties to be officially informed before the league could make a statement. So they weren't sitting on their hands for a full week like a lot of people on social media claimed. They were actively working to set up this proper investigation, which I thought was all the right steps in the right direction.
I just don't think it's fair to assume that just because the league hadn't made a public statement doesn't mean that nothing is going on behind the scenes, which clearly Ambrosi shed light on at that press conference that you were at, JC. There has been one new happening, we'll call it, with this lawsuit. Three Down Nation has obtained a copy of the statement of claim, and that was filed on February 21st, the Thursday JC alluded to. On February 27th, the Argonauts filed an intent to defend. So I'll get into a tiny bit of legal jargon here. I'm obviously no lawyer, but that statement of intent to defend, or the intent to defend, I should say, gives you an extra 10 days in Ontario to file a statement of defense, if indeed that's the way the Argonauts are going to go. So they now have 30 days from when they were served with this statement of claim, which appears to be the 21st, we don't know that for certain, to file their statement of defense. Chad Kelly has yet to file his own intent to defend, but we don't know where he was served or if he has been served. That's the real key here. If he has been served in Canada, he has 20 days to at least file an intent to defend, which gives you 10 extra days to file your statement of defense. So that could be 30 total days. But we know Chad Kelly spends a decent amount of time in the United States of America. If you're served while in the US and you have to be served physically in person, then that gives you some extra time. I believe it is, I'm just going to check the document here, 40 days in the U.S. So there's some extra time there for Chad Kelly if he was going to file a statement of defense. So that's the absolute latest as of this taping, just after noon on Wednesday, Eastern time on March 6th, as to what's going on with the case. You can be assured that Three Down Nation will do its absolute best to report the facts of this case and follow it through its completion on the legal side and also the league side. But as we've stressed last week, and I want to stress it again, please be patient because this is going to take some time. When you get served with a lawsuit, you don't just have a statement of defense there ready to go because you don't know that it's coming. And based on Ambrosi's comments, I think a lot of the people involved here, the league, the Argonauts, and Chad Kelly, only found out about this on February 21st. Now, I would like to ask some questions as to some other potential goings on before that, but those are the facts as we know them right now.
Yeah, props to both of you guys for the work that you've done on this story. JC going in person, Dunk procuring the lawsuit itself. I will say I've talked to a number of sources around the league who are upset with the league's response here. And I'm talking to people on or affiliated with other teams simply because in years past, when a player has been the subject of accusations or been the subject of legal charges, they've generally been out, right? They've generally been cut. And that move has been made very swiftly. The league here is operating more slowly, which I actually think is a smart thing to do, especially given that, again, it's March. It's not like the Argos have a game in 3 days. But I think that maybe this is a standard that should be held to all players, right? And if a player is the subject of allegations or criminal charges or anything like that during a season, it's probably best that they don't play. But they also maybe should be on some type of commissioner's exempt list, like the NFL has, where they can still collect a paycheck and they can still, you know, maybe not be in team facilities, but they're also not barred from the league before something is tested in court. So I agree with the dissenters in the league that maybe there needs to be a more even hand here. And maybe with the response the league has had here, this could be the new standard for justice in the CFL. I will also agree with some of the CFL's critics here that a week was probably a long time for just a statement to come out. I think that the league's approach to this with the independent investigation should be applauded. I think that's a positive step. I do think that going radio silent about it for a full week was a bit long. But at the end of the day, this is not a process that should be rushed. This is a process that the league needs to get right. This is, of course, not only involving serious accusations, but it's also involving arguably the face of the league and the CFL's most important players. This is a situation that has to be taken properly. And Three Down Nation is hopeful that we will get a meaningful update potentially in a couple weeks when the league's brass and all of its teams will have representatives in Winnipeg for the combine on the 19th. That is a Tuesday, just under 2 weeks away. As of the taping of this podcast, we will have the opportunity to speak to Toronto Argonauts general manager Mike Pinball-Clemens and head coach Ryan Dinwiddie, both of whom I'm sure will be asked either by us or another outlet about the situation. So bear with us. We will continue reporting on this. And though we might not have a meaningful update next week, we certainly will, depending, of course, on what Dinwiddie and Clemens say at the Combine in Winnipeg in a couple weeks' time. And until then, we'll have to wait and see. But patience is probably going to be the key here, as Justin said.
Yeah, the league has the luxury to do this right. And I know we mentioned this last week, but all of the other situations that are even somewhat comparable to this have happened in season, when there is immense pressure to get something done within the span of a week. Everybody's in the office, everyone's working all the time, and you've got sort of a deadline. We've got to make a decision on whether or not this player is going to be on the field come Saturday when games kick off. Well, that's not the case right now. They have the luxury to take some time. Nobody's getting paid right now. It's the off season. Nobody's about to play a game. they can take the time to investigate this thoroughly before they make any sort of decision on Chad Kelly. The New England Patriots have signed Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke to a one-year contract extension, keeping the exclusive rights free agent in the fold. What does this mean for the former CFL superstar's NFL future?
It means that at least the New England Patriots liked what they saw of him in his limited time there in New England to finish the season last year. It also means that he has signed a contract that could be worth up to $915,000 USD for the coming season. That said, there was no signing bonus or guaranteed money included in that contract. I also think it's important to note that if he was on the practice squad for New England based on a bunch of potential options that could happen to the quarterback position with the Patriots, he would make $12,000 US per week, with that netting $216,000 US for an entire season. If he had accrued two or more seasons, that would jump up, but he's not there yet. He has one accrued season. Rourke made $519,668 last season in the NFL. That's more than any player made in the CFL. I think that's important to note here. And the intriguing part to me that will show a lot about how the Patriots really view Rourke is what's coming up next on the NFL calendar. Free agency. The Patriots are already said to have interest in signing veteran quarterback Jacoby Brissett, who started his career in the NFL with the Patriots, and New England currently holds the number 3 overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft. There's lots of talk about them potentially using that pick on a quarterback. We'll find out when the draft actually happens. But there is lots to pay attention to here if you're Rourke and a fan of the Canadian quarterback on the NFL calendar, because if they go and spend even a decent amount of money on a Brissett or somebody else to bring them into New England, then that would probably show that a person is at least going to be a backup and possibly a mentor if they do go quarterback at the top of the draft. But nothing is set in stone. I just think there's a lot to look at here in terms of what happens for the Patriots at quarterback. But it does bode well, I think, for how they view him, the fact that they wanted to lock him down before some of these other processes played out, specifically the legal tampering window and free agency, and the fact that they didn't let that March 3rd.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
14th exclusive rights free agent deadline get really too close. If this was something that was done at the NFL Combine.
I think this is a good move for Rourke. I think it's a good move for the New England Patriots. The Patriots were objectively terrible on the offensive side of the ball this past season. They do not have a great offensive line. They do not have any weapons that particularly frighten opposing defenses. They need all the talent they can get, and Nathan Rourke has talent in spades. The biggest question to me, we know that Nathan Rourke, for instance, in 2023, picked his NFL destination. He picked the Jacksonville Jaguars, a team that has a former first overall pick deeply embedded in that starting role in Trevor Lawrence. My fear as a CFL fan is that we're going to find a situation where Nathan Rourke is embedded behind a third overall pick. However, when you look at the history of the draft, maybe that's not a big deal. And the reason I say that is this. In 2021, that was the last time three quarterbacks went with the first three picks in the NFL draft. Trevor Lawrence, aforementioned, went number one to the Jaguars. Number two was Zach Wilson to the New York Jets, a pick that I think at this point we can 100% uniformly say was one of the worst picks in NFL draft history, an absolute bust of all busts. And behind him at third overall out of North Dakota State was quarterback Trey Lance to the San Francisco 49ers, a team that traded up to get him. A pick that was, I think we can confirmly say here, was even worse than Zach Wilson, an absolutely terrible pick. Now, this year's draft class is obviously different than 2021. It seems like a foregone conclusion that Caleb Williams will be going to the Chicago Bears at number one. Drake May out of UNC will likely be the second overall pick to Washington. Obviously, that depends.
Jaden Daniels could get in there.
That depends on some trades, but the point is Jaden Daniels will likely be available to the New England Patriots as the Heisman Trophy winner at third overall. There are also some other quarterbacks who have potentially moved up draft boards following the combine. Michael Penix Jr., who obviously had a sensational season out west with the Washington Huskies, got a clean bill of health. J.J. McCarthy, who did great things en route to a national championship with Michigan, I think probably should be sliding down draft boards, but by all accounts, might be moving up some draft boards. So we'll have to wait and see what the Patriots do here. If I were the Patriots, I'm not saying I would start Nathan Rourke, but I think a combination of Jacoby Brissett, Nathan Rourke is probably good enough at the quarterback position right now, considering all the other things that they need. And I don't think outside of the top two picks, you're getting a bona fide franchise quarterback. I think Caleb Williams and Drake May are that. I don't think anybody else is, but it would certainly not be the first time that an NFL team reached on a quarterback based on need that maybe didn't pan out. Maybe they will pan out, right? The draft at the end of the day is a big old unknown. We don't know what these players will do at the professional level. But regardless, kudos to Nathan Rourke for getting another NFL contract. Kudos to him for sticking it out. And depending on how things play out in the draft, you know, he might have a long way to go to get a potential starting job or even just a potential opportunity to start. Maybe he won't. Remains to be seen.
Yeah, a lot of people, when Rourke was going through his workout tour, talked about the desire to avoid a situation where there was chaos at quarterback, that a little bit of stability was actually better for him at a place like Jacksonville, where even though he wasn't going to challenge Lawrence for the number one, he knew what to expect going in, that he was going to have a solid shot in a backup role. And New England is currently the very definition of chaos, right? Mac Jones and Bailey Zappe are still under contract. They may be released. They may not be. Maybe Jacoby Brissett is coming in. Maybe a quarterback is coming in through the draft. We really don't know what that organization is going to look like when they take the field next season. But I don't think it's a bad spot for Rourke for that reason, right? We've seen players, as you've so brilliantly highlighted, Hodge, come in behind rookies that have been taken highly and win that job. Because guess what? Rookies make mistakes. And rookies fall on their face all the time. And sometimes rookies even get injured, right? You're talking about a guy in Jaden Daniels who I think just about every NFL talent evaluator across the board is absolutely pooping their pants right now because he's got a tendency to run a little bit dangerously and he's not the biggest framed guy in the world. And so there is a thought that, is this a guy who might be exposed to injury? Well, you go back a few years, Robert Griffin III comes in, a guy very much like that, runs around the field. And who was behind him drafted in the same draft class? Kirk Cousins. Well, when Robert Griffin III goes down, Kirk Cousins is able to step into that role. And a guy that nobody expected to become a starting quarterback became one. There are opportunities there when rookies falter or rookies get hurt, just like with any other player. I also don't think it's completely outside the realm of possibility that New England just doesn't draft a quarterback because they know their team is so terrible elsewhere that it makes no sense to throw a rookie in there, that they bring in a guy like Brissett to start for a year and they take Marvin Harrison Jr. at third overall and get the, you know, all pro caliber receiver. And then maybe halfway through the year when Brissett is being Jacoby Brissett, Nathan Rourke gets his opportunity. These are all things that are on the table. And I think it's a little bit telling, and this hasn't been talked about a ton, but the new head coach of the New England Patriots is Jerod Mayo. His brother, of course, former CFL star Daron Mayo, who's on that New England staff. So this is not a guy who's unfamiliar with the CFL by any stretch of the imagination, likely has an appreciation for CFL talent. And this is an organization that still philosophically is very much the same one that Belichick ran. And he was completely comfortable with having three, sometimes even four, quarterbacks on the active roster, as he did back in the year 2000 with some random dude named Tom Brady as the fourth stringer. So I think this is a real nice spot for Rourke where there is a lot of different options, but all of them point to him getting some sort of opportunity on the active roster.
If you look at Elliot Wolf, who is entitled the director of scouting, but essentially the de facto GM for the New England Patriots, he has a long history with the Green Bay Packers, who drafted and developed quarterbacks and believed that, you know, guy like Jordan Love needed some time to sit. I'm not saying he was the only guy factoring into that decision, but he's been in an organization that went through that and had that thought process. Same with Aaron Rodgers before Brett Favre moved on from Green Bay. So I think if you're Wolf and Jerod Mayo and a new staff, firstly looking at Rourke and saying, hey, yeah, we want to sign that guy. Like, NFL teams aren't going to waste their time signing players to contracts that they don't think can contribute. I also think from Wolf and Mayo's perspective, they probably like the fact that Rourke has upside and has been in the league for at least a year. He's not a raw rookie coming, you know, straight from the CFL or from college, because it is a different speed. It is a different game. As much as they could entertain taking a quarterback at the top of the draft with that third overall pick, there's also lots of chatter from NFL insiders saying that, well, they could trade that pick for a bunch of picks to help replenish the offense. The Patriots defense can be really good, was still pretty good last year, but the offense needs to be upgraded in multiple positions, or you could stick right there, as JC said, take Marvin Harrison Jr., who is one of probably the least riskiest prospects that you could get at that spot at number three, have a generational potential talent there at receiver, and then look elsewhere to fill at quarterback, because the pressure that comes from taking quarterback at number three, if you're a GM and a first-time head coach, means that, you know, that could be a big swing and the miss, and that could be enough to get you fired, especially if you're a GM in the chair making that decision. So I think there are multiple factors that could play out here, but Rourke, as much as people don't want to hear it from a CFL fan perspective, is in a great situation. He's got a year under his belt in the NFL, was waived and went back to the practice roster and was picked up by a new team and had to go through all those types of things. And that experience will bode well for him in the future, whatever happens in the NFL. And the other thing I don't think that has been talked about at all with this situation is that the Patriots probably felt like in re-signing him that they didn't want to allow him to go to another team. So I think that over the years, if you listen to rival talent evaluators and even people in the CFL and agents in particular, they'll tell you, if you can get a CFL player or a Canadian player in for a workout with the Patriots when Bill Belichick was there, that other teams would immediately take an interest. Now, it's different because Belichick is gone, but I still think that patriot mindset is there from the success of the organization. So I think you have to look at it from that perspective, that they didn't want Rourke to potentially go elsewhere, which is obviously one of the reasons that they re-signed him in New England.
And by the way, before we go on, I'll say trading down is probably a brilliant option for the Patriots because somebody among the league's other 30 teams, right? There's going to be two guys at the top. There's going to be a bunch of teams wanting the opportunity to draft a Jaden Daniels at third overall, right? Or draft a Michael Penix Jr. at third overall. And if you're the Patriots, what better opportunity to trade down the board, fill your offensive line, fill your receiving core, draft some players. Their defense is pretty good. Draft guys to that could eventually, right, be pieces that could help your quarterback because, yeah, their offense right now, man, that offense is brutal.
Four Canadian players participated in the 2024 NFL Combine, including tight ends Tanner McLaughlin and Theo Johnson, and offensive lineman Isaiah Adams and Aneem Dankwa. Which of these prospects impressed you the most and why?
Well, I thought McLaughlin had a good combine. I thought Adams had a pretty good combine. But the player who I think stands out far and above the rest of them is Theo Johnson. Born in Winnipeg, according to Wikipedia, I haven't confirmed that, but certainly raised in Windsor. But if he's a Winnipegger, I will happily claim him as such. That is what we do in Manitoba. If you sniffed the prairies for like even 5 minutes as a child, we claim you for life. Oh yeah, he's from Winnipeg. He's from Winnipeg. Oh, that, you know that guy? He's from Winnipeg. So I will claim Theo Johnson. 6'6", 259, was highly productive at Penn State. But the fact that he's out here at essentially 260 pounds running a 4.57 is unbelievable. 39 and a half inches in the vertical jump. Unbelievable. And he had the fastest shuttle time of all tight ends at 4.19 seconds. Like, I knew
Brock Bowers included, baby.
Like everybody knew Theo Johnson was an athlete. That's not a surprise. But what was a surprise is that even among other, because this is considered to be a very solid group of tight ends in this year's NFL draft, even among those other players, he is still a standout athlete at 6'6", 259. So unbelievable performance from him. I think that he certainly helped himself with that combine performance. He's still not going to be, I don't think, a first day pick, but I think at this point, you would certainly like his chances of being a day two pick, meaning a guy who's going to go in round two or three and project as a starter, maybe not starting right away in the NFL, but a guy who before long should be starting on Sundays. Cause holy smokes, 4.57 at that size is a very rare combination.
Yeah. You're
a 40 inch vertical almost at that size.
Unbelievable.
Is insane.
Unbelievable.
You guys are right to be shocked because I forget who it was that reported it on Twitter, but that's the first time in NFL history that a tight end weighing more than 255 pounds has run a sub 4.6 and jumped over 39 inches. Never been
crazy.
Done before.
Crazy.
Crazy, crazy athleticism. And certainly you mentioned it, Hodge. It was a guy who was viewed in that round four, maybe round five range. I think has decidedly moved himself up into at least round three. He's going to be a day two selection. Although it should be noted, Dunk, despite your excitement, Brock Bowers did not test at the NFL Combine. So his numbers have yet to be posted. But the other guy that really impressed me, not just for his performance, but for how he was spoken about, was the other tight end, Tanner McLaughlin, kid who went from Lethbridge to Southern Utah, was originally a basketball scholarship guy, focused on football, and eventually walked on at the University of Arizona and become the most successful tight end for the Wildcats since Rob Gronkowski broke all his tight end reception records there in Arizona. Well, he goes out there and he runs a 4.61. Now, he's significantly smaller than Theo, just over 240 pounds. But what I loved most about his performance was watching the NFL Network broadcast and hearing Daniel Jeremiah talk about Tanner McLaughlin. Because there are a few people who command as much respect in the media from a talent evaluation standpoint as Daniel Jeremiah. He, of course, did it at an extremely high level as an NFL scout before moving on to the media side. He is not a guy who came up on the journalist side and has moved into that talent evaluation role, or somebody who, you know, listens to what other people are telling him. He's making those evaluations himself, and people around the league appreciate those and respect those evaluations. And whenever Tanner McLaughlin came onto the field, he could not help himself from saying, wow, I just love that guy. Yeah, it's one of my sleepers. He's one of my favorites. And when you've got somebody of Daniel Jeremiah's caliber of evaluation talking about you like that when you're on the field at the NFL Combine alongside all those top guys at your position, I think that really speaks volumes, and he's somebody who could really be a day three sleeper and maybe even slip into that day two mix as well.
You know, I largely agree with you on Daniel Jeremiah, but just to provide some balance here, Mike Mayock used to be that guy beside Rich Eisen doing all the NFL Network draft stuff. And his tenure as the Raiders GM didn't really go that well, okay?
Former CFL obviously, broadcaster Mike Mayock.
True. Obviously, Theo Johnson was the most impressive. But the guy that I want to highlight is Isaiah Adams, because he had a unique story going from Wilfrid Laurier University as a left tackle, then to University of Illinois, starting there, and is a guy who has a legit chance to be an NFL draft pick along the lines of Tavius Robinson, who did the same thing, was at the University of Guelph for a couple of years, then went to Ole Miss, and was a part of that great Ravens defense last season. Dean Leonard, another one in that same ilk that went from U Sports to the SEC, the University of Calgary, to Ole Miss with Tavius Robinson in them, was selected by the Los Angeles Chargers. I always want to say San Diego Superchargers, but not there anymore. So there's a number of guys that have done this, yes, going from U Sports straight to the NFL, but this new path has opened up where we've seen these great athletes start in U Sports, realize their potential, and end up going to a big-time NCAA Division I school and parlaying that into being a legit NFL draft prospect. So kudos to Adams and the path that he's taken to get there.
And Adams, I didn't think his testing numbers were amazing. They're not. They're not bad, but they're not amazing. But his film is unbelievable. Like, he played out of position at tackle this past season. And I remember when the first Scouting Bureau rankings came out, I went and I watched some of him playing, and then watching the other offensive linemen at or near the top of the Scouting Bureau rankings. And no disrespect to the other offensive linemen, but it was like night and day. It was like a man and boys. Like, yeah. He is so unbelievably good. I think he's going to be a 10-year starter at guard in the NFL. I really do. Yeah. He is so good. I know that, you know, he's at the top of the Scouting Bureau rankings. It's irrelevant. He's never playing in the CFL. And I think talent evaluators know that. Someone who will be playing in the CFL, however, I think is Aneem Donkwa out of Howard. We reported that he ran a 5.11 in the 40-yard dash. And when I saw that, I was like, holy smokes. That is unbelievable, because he has heavy feet. He does not move terribly well on film. And then all of a sudden the NFL came out and said, oh, this is a clerical error. Our apologies. He didn't run the 40. And so we had to retract our reporting, which no fault of our own, but we did technically report it. He did not run. He did not look great in the testing. He's somebody who I think at this point, despite attending the NFL Combine, will be seen as a CFL prospect unless an NFL team simply falls in love with his frame. He is 6'8", 357 pounds. If you're an NFL team looking to add size, Donkwa is the player for you. The question is, can he move well enough to play at that level? I'm skeptical, but I hope he proves me wrong.
I think the fact, though, he was at the Combine shows that there's at least NFL interest in him and that they can develop him, right? And with the expanded practice rosters, maybe this is what JC is going to go into. I think he's a worthy prospect.
I think there's virtually no chance that he doesn't get at least a contract being at the Combine. Like, every guy there basically gets signed. And Aneem Donkwa, with his unique frame, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's the biggest offensive lineman there, bar none. Right? He's not the tallest, but he's the heaviest, the second heaviest player at the entire combine behind Tavondre Sweat from Texas is Aneem Donkwa, 353 pounds and just a hair under that 6'8". He is a massive, massive individual. You're talking in the realm of a Mekhi Becton. Would it have been better if he went out there and tested crazily, like the NFL initially reported on their tracker before it became abundantly clear that they had mixed him up with Olofeshanu, who was supposed to run right after him and is also a massive man and a projected first round pick. Yeah, it would have been better if he'd done that. But I think when you are that freakish in your size, it's hard for the NFL to miss you. And when you come out on the biggest stage and are at least able to go through the drills, that speaks volumes.
Well, I'll say this. I'm going to be the heaviest member of the media at the CFL Combine. So y'all better keep that same energy. Okay? Don't keep that same energy. Don't be hating on the big man at the Combine. Or you better bring the same love at the Combine that you're bringing right now. But I will say, I don't think it was an impressive performance. Will he get signed based on size? Probably. But I also want to provide our listeners with my honest take, my honest feedback. Donkwa, again, I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player. I'm just saying I was hopeful that we were going to see better from him. But kudos to him. NFL Combine out of a guy who's coming from a relatively small program is a big deal. He's also not played a ton of football, right? He took the football a little bit later. I don't think he started playing until grade 10, if I'm remembering correctly. So who knows? Maybe the development's there. And also, I will say this. Mekhi Becton would have benefited from playing 20 pounds lighter. Maybe Donkwa doesn't need to be 357. Maybe he can play and move his feet a little bit better at 325. That's still plenty heavy to be playing offensive line, even in the NFL.
Hodge, you know there's somebody on Twitter or about to send you an email asking why you are making fun of your own weight.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. Be literally, I'll say as a blanket statement, be literally whatever size you want to be. I don't care. Before anybody sends us an email about me being sizist or not being sizist enough or being, I don't know. No. I'm going to be the
head. There's no body shaming here, man. You got to love the big boys. They protect the, quote, skill guys up front. I know JC hates that term, but the thing that I love about football, and more it's growing on the women's side, there's still a long way to go, but there is a place for everybody, shape and size.
Absolutely.
Doesn't really discriminate.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
What was it, a Jason Kelsey's retirement press conference? Was that yesterday or the day before? And he said, it's remarkable that 6'9" Jordan Mailata plays the same sport as 4'8" Darren Sproles. And I thought that was a great line.
Absolutely.
So true, man.
That is one of the reasons I love football. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's what sports should be. I know it's not always possible, but there should be a spot for everybody. And it's cool that we got that now.
I know you guys, hold on, before we move on, follow the draft super close. Are there any Canadian prospects who did not go to the NFL Combine that people should be paying attention to who could go in the later rounds, could sign as priority undrafted free agents, could get mini camp invites? You want to give some love to anybody who's popping off the tape?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, we've talked about him before, but Theo Benedet from UBC, I think, has a legitimate chance to get drafted as a late round prospect out of U Sports. He's been super impressive through this process. And of course, his teammate, Giovanni Manu, may also have an opportunity, has signed with the same agent as Odell Beckham Jr. He's a true 6'8", 350 pounds, just like Aneem Donkwa. So that size just pops off the table. Again, I question some of the movement skills at times. Is he going to be good enough for the NFL level? Maybe not, but somebody who's, I think, going to get at least a contract, a flyer, to try and prove that he can stick at that level. And then another offensive lineman that I absolutely adore is Kyle Hergel out of Boston College, who has gone through three colleges in his collegiate career and I think has dominated at all three of the levels. He started out at North Dakota, was an incredible prospect there, transfers to Texas State, dominates there, and then transfers up to the Power Five with Boston College, and again is an exceptional guard, graded in the 80s by Pro Football Focus. He has one of the top 10 career grades by Pro Football Focus of any guard eligible in this year's draft. That is a big statement about how consistent he's been throughout his college career. Somebody who I think somebody might fall in love with if he tests well at his pro day, could be a late round pick, but is certainly going to get, in my mind, a UDFA shot.
Kyle Hergill's pro day at Boston College is March 22nd, so it'll be a couple weeks before you see his testing results. He reportedly left a 34-inch vertical jump just a couple years ago, so he is somebody who could absolutely blow up the testing. Somebody I will highlight quickly is Levi, Quebec native linebacker Jeffrey Canton-Arcoux. He spent the last 2 years at Memphis after transferring from Syracuse. His pro day is March 28th, so we're 3 weeks away from seeing what he does. But he told me that he is hoping to run sub 4.6 in the 40-yard dash, which at 6'4" and 230 pounds, you know, a guy who played at a big-time Power 5 school, you know, that would certainly put him potentially in the mix to be a late round selection. He is certainly confident in his abilities and somebody who is confident right now that he could turn a lot of heads with what he tests. Again, we don't know if he'll test well, if he'll test poorly, but right now he's very confident about what he could potentially do. And we're only a few weeks away from finding out. It's now time for Hodges' Heritage Moment. On this day in 2020, Norm Fieldgate passed away at the age of 88. The Regina native spent 14 seasons with the BC Lions, starting his career as a quote-unquote founding member of the team in its inaugural year of 1954. He dressed for 223 games with the club and was named a West Division All-Star three times, winning a Grey Cup in 1964. Fieldgate was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 1979 and had his number 75 retired by the team following his retirement. JC, you're based in Vancouver. You're a soft BC guy. Tell us, what do you know about Norm Fieldgate? Somebody who was certainly not soft.
He's absolutely a living legend, one of the best players in the history of this franchise. But whenever I think of Norm Fieldgate, I always think of UBC, which of course I'm an alumni of, but he played a couple of seasons there. Originally was a member of the Regina Rams in the junior football, moved out west just before joining the Lions, played with UBC. And this was the era. You have Norm Fieldgate, a Hall of Famer, was the star of the team. And Don Coryell was the head coach. Pro Football Hall of Fame head coach Don Coryell goes on to create the Air Coryell offense in the NFL, which is one of the most successful passing offenses of all time. Those two are together on the field for the T-Birds, going up against American competition in the NAIA, and I think they generated two wins. So imagine how bad the rest of the team must have been if you've got those two guys there at the same time and you're not putting up victories.
Let's go to the three-minute drill. Hodge, you reported that defensive lineman Michael Roan has been added to the 2024 CFL draft. What can you tell us about him, and when will you drop your first mock, bro? The people want to know.
The people do want to know. Let's start with Roan. So Roan qualifies as Canadian because his mother was born in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, spent most of her childhood in and around Canada, going out west, eventually ending up in Penticton. He is 6'4", 255 pounds. He's a defensive end, which is, I think, an area that, you know, in the draft needed maybe a little bit more depth. He's supplying that. He started his college career at the University of Minnesota, transferred to the Coyotes, the exact same collegiate path that Chris Streveler took. I spoke with Micah a couple of days ago. Yes, he knows who Chris Streveler is, has met Chris Streveler, so that's an interesting connection through back channels. As for the mock, I'm not dropping the mock until Joel DeBlanco is officially in the draft. I caught wind of Joel DeBlanco about a week ago. He got his Canadian citizenship at the end of February. The paperwork's not done. Once he's in the draft, I will drop the mock. This year's Grey Cup Festival in Vancouver will feature a zip line. JC, how many times are you going to take that ride?
Hodge, you're incorrect. It will feature two zip lines, one of which will be over open water between the two convention centers in Vancouver. It looks like it's going to be a blast. I will certainly be taking at least one ride, and I think the one down the street has dueling lines so you can race your friends. Hodge, you want to take me on in a zip line race?
I cannot wait to watch you and Dunk compete on the zip lines from the safety of the ground, because I am not touching either of those things.
Bro, that's not fair. That wouldn't be a fair race. He's got how many pounds on me?
Yeah, I got some heft. That's the first time that being a heavier dude has made me fast.
Yeah.
Does it make you go faster or does it make you go slower? We got to talk to a physicist here.
I think if it's going downhill, it's all the momentum, right?
Maybe. I don't know.
You gotta have some mass behind you.
Hey, instead of us getting your troll email, could we get an email from a physicist this week explaining the explaining the physics of zip lines? That would be great. Please send us your zip line physics.
In a story you broke, Dunk, former CFL quarterback Drew Tate has been hired as an offensive assistant coach with the Toronto Argos. Think he'll be able to help the Boatmen?
I definitely think so. There are people who played with him and have worked with him as a coach now that think he is a riser in this business. It is a very smart hire for the Argos to get Mr. Tate in the building. Dominique Rimes told TSN 1200 that he sees parallels between Drew Brown and Nathan Rourke. What? He thinks Brown will be great with the Red Blacks. Are these comparisons really apt, though, Hodge?
I will say, I think there are some similarities between Rourke and Brown. The frames are similar. Brown's a little smaller, but they both are very good at throwing on the run. I think that's the best part of Brown's game. I also think Brown makes extremely quick decisions, which is something that I think hurt the Red Blacks last year as quarterbacks holding the ball for a very long time, making that offensive line look bad. I also think the offensive line could have played better, but I think the offensive line was made to look worse than it was by slow decision-making. So I see some similarities, but I'm going to also hedge my bets here a little bit. I think we maybe need to take a bit of a pause before we compare Drew Brown to Nathan Rourke. I need to see him outside of that Winnipeg system.
I mean, it's Nathan Rourke, for God's sakes. He was a CFL superstar, one of the best ever quarterbacks to play in the league. Wait, no, I'm just joking around, but he was really, really, really good.
Former McGill head coach Ronald Hilaire has been tapped to lead Team Canada 2 at the IFAF World Junior Championship in Edmonton. Is that a smart choice?
It's always good when you can get a former U Sports head coach to head up something like this. I think it's going to be a really interesting dynamic. Two Team Canadas in this 8-team tournament because Team Mexico unfortunately defaulted on their entrance fee. The team that Canada beat in the gold medal game at the last tournament, which took place in Mexico, will not be in attendance. So I think both Team Canadas have a shot to be really competitive here. Imagine a scenario, gold medal game, Team Canada 1 versus Team Canada 2. True. Champions of the world. Veteran players Brett Lawther and Jake Thomas made the newly elected board of directors with the CFLPA. Think they'll do a proper job?
I definitely do. Both guys care deeply about this league, and obviously both of them are Canadian as well. And I think it's great to have representation from our country on the PA board, also balance it out with Americans, obviously, as well. But to have some veteran guys who really know how this league works and how it can be successful from a player standpoint will be very beneficial for the PA. In a story you broke, Hodge, Quantes Stiggers will hold his NFL Pro Day at his old high school in Atlanta on March 15th. What do you think he'll run in that all-important 40-yard dash?
Well, I've heard murmurings that he is expecting to run in the 4.4s, and I think if he does that at 6 foot 200 pounds, his chances of getting drafted skyrocket. Well, I mean, he's probably getting drafted at this point, but certainly the area he gets drafted could improve. The BC Lions are bringing back the Gravy Bowl for this year's Thanksgiving game against the Calgary Stampeders. Jumbo Cheese, think you'll be able to score some turkey.
You know what? I don't want to say a bad word about the Lions organization because they've been very kind to us in the media, but the press box trimmings, a little bit skint out here in BC. Not a lot going on. So
it's because all you guys eat is like hummus and quinoa.
You really got to time it up right if you want one of those pregame meals.
It doesn't
look
like JC eats much quinoa or hummus.
Actually, I love a good hummus. I just eat it with like six loaves of pita bread at the same time, which counteracts the effects.
It's a lot of carbs, bro. It's a lot of carbs.
Too many, if you ask me.
In a story you broke, Doug, the Ottawa Redblacks cut dual-threat quarterback Tyrell Pigrome. Was that a surprise?
It wasn't, if you just simply look at how many quarterbacks Ottawa had on the roster, especially with experience. I, for one, I think Hodge and probably JC to a degree would agree with me that Pigrome, I think, can be a very intriguing quarterback prospect in this league. I'll be curious to see where he lands, but you look at who the Redblacks have: Drew Brown, Jeremiah Masoli, Dustin Crum, Tyree Adams, and Jake Dunaway, I believe, is still under contract there as well. You got a bunch of guys that have more CFL experience than Pigrome, and obviously you paid Drew Brown to be your likely starter. So it made sense to get rid of Pigrome, but I think he's going to be a valuable piece for whichever team picks him up. The Saskatchewan Roughriders have named the auditorium at Mosaic Stadium after Jim Hobson, the team's first full-time president and CEO. Was that a classy move?
I think it is. I think it's great that the Jim Hobson Auditorium will be the host of many team meetings and various functions for the next, presumably, 50-plus years in Regina. We all know, by the way, that Jim is currently battling stage 4 colon cancer. On behalf of everybody at Three Down Nation, we would like to wish him the very best with his health as he continues this battle against a terrible disease. Best of luck to you, Jim. We wish you all the best health in the world. One more thing, and before I ask it, JC, I just want to get this right. You are not an alumni of UBC. You are an alumnus of UBC, and it's embarrassing that UBC didn't teach you the difference between alumni and alumnus. They should take that degree back. Take it back. Teach the kids.
Alumni is plural.
Alumni is more than one person.
English degree.
Wasn't an English degree. Fair enough. The other thing that universities have to teach people, because I see this in scout or in prospects bios all the time, is they'll be like class of 22, but they put the apostrophe after the 22. No, if you're omitting the first two digits of the year, the apostrophe goes first. Hashtag grammar matters, people. Grammar matters.
But maybe there's two JC Abbotts that exists.
Are you saying that JC is a split personality?
One of them is here taping the podcast with us. I don't know. And one of them is out scouting prospects for the CFL's invitational.
One of them is
the amount of knowledge this guy has about the CFL draft. You too, Hodge, but more so with JC, makes me think that there's two.
No. The other JC is out practicing his zip lining skills to wipe you in November. That is how it's happening. Anyway, last one. The CFL's Invitational Combine is slated for Friday at the University of Waterloo. Which player are you most excited to watch perform?
Give us a couple, JC, and dare I say, go almost as long as you want until we cut you off.
Well, I will have a full preview on this coming out in the next couple of days. I would have said Kyle Sampson, the defensive tackle out of UBC, two-time All-Canadian player for the T-Birds. I really like his game. Unfortunately, he will no longer be in attendance. He's still nursing a foot injury and will test at UBC's Pro Day alongside Benedict and Manu, as previously mentioned. So I'll highlight two other names. The first, I think, is a true wild card. DK Bonhomme is a outside linebacker, defensive end, who started his collegiate career at Indiana, looked like he was going to become a star there, but then never really got over the hump. Sort of the coaching staff lost trust in him, eventually transferred to Southern Alabama and was done after 1 year there and has been off the radar entirely for a full season. If he comes out and puts up some crazy testing numbers, I mean, it's very rare you see a guy with true FBS Power 5 pedigree come into one of these invitational combines. He could be somebody who really pops off the page and elevates his draft stock if he can be a better pro than he was a collegiate player. The other guy who I'm really intrigued to see just how serious he's taking this process, if he's committed to football and if he can put up some good numbers, is a guy named James Stockwood. James Stockwood is 6'6", 320 pounds, plays defensive tackle. He was originally at the University of Toronto, was a OUA all-rookie team member in 2019, dropped out, went to the Okanagan Sun of the BC Football Conference in the Canadian Junior Football League, was an all-Canadian there, dominating at defensive tackle, and then dropped football for the last 2 years, has been practicing with Rugby Canada's developmental program out here on the West Coast on Vancouver Island, the Pacific Pride, in a chance to become a Team Canada rugby player his size, moves incredibly well. I wonder what he'll test and if he can hold his own in the football drills after 2 years away from the game. He could be somebody who has been completely off the radar and shocks everybody with his size.
I'm going to give you one guy at this combine. Hodge, you can jump in here too if you want. But Ramsey Dervis is an absolute banger, a standout linebacker at the University of Saskatchewan. A lot of attention is going to be on Nick Weeb. You know, despite his injury, I still think he'll be a great CFL prospect, and rightfully so. But Dervis is a guy who is going to come into the CFL for whatever team drafts him. I do think there's a really good chance he gets drafted and be a special teams demon. This guy's ultra physical, played multiple positions there, was trusted by Warren Muzyka, that defensive coordinator, and I think is a guy that has a lot of intriguing potential and even some untapped upside potentially at the pro level.
One thing I will add, and I'm seeing a lot on my, you know, Twitter feed, articles, people writing, you know, saying, well, remember, like, Kian Schaefer Baker was a regional guy and blah, blah, blah. Yes, there are some pretty cool success stories that have come from the regional / invitational combine. Thing I will point out, and I don't want to be a party pooper, but I'm about to poop on the party, is that those years where those invitationals / regionals were done, the initial combine roster would only be like 40 guys, and then they would add more. This year's combine roster, as of the recording of this podcast, is 62 players. So in other words, they've opened the national up, which, by the way, I want to mention, full credit to the CFL for doing that. I remember going to the combine, especially the first year with globals, I think that was 2019, being like, why do we have 30 globals and 40 Canadians? We're expecting teams to have one global player and like
CFL 2.0,
and like
bro.
30 Canadians, but yet it's almost like one for one global to Canadian. So kudos to the CFL for bringing in a lot more guys to the national. But the thing I'm trying to illustrate is that just between the national combine guys and the pro day guys, that's enough players right there to fill the entire draft. So it goes to show, if a guy pops off at the invitational, which would be great, my point is there's already a lot more competition at the national than there would be in past years. So when you're comparing past years to now, it's not necessarily apples to apples. It is a little bit apples to oranges. But I'm excited for the invitational, just like you guys, because inevitably, yes, there will be at least one guy who pops off and ends up going in the third round, in the fourth round. And that'll be exciting to see. But thank you as always.
Hutch, who's your guy?
Oh, I don't have one off the top of my head.
You didn't name anyone.
I don't have anybody off the top of my head.
Come on, bro.
Okay, I will give you one. And that is because I think at 6'3", at the defensive back position, I don't understand why this guy isn't getting more hype. And frankly, I'm surprised he's not at the national. He ran 4.87 at the East-West Bowl, was named a first-team OUA All-Star this past year. That is, and I'm hesitating to say his name because I'm not sure I'm going to say it correctly, is Richard Adubafor. And I hope I'm saying that correctly. There's not a lot of defensive backs in the CF. And by the way, that was on a slow track at East-West. Maybe he's a 4.8 laser guy. If you're 6'3", 201, running 4.8 laser as a defensive back, and you played for the top team, arguably, in Canada, one would think you're at least at the national. He's not. He's at the invitation.
Yeah,
so
I think that should be noted about the U Sports East-West Bowl testing numbers is, for whatever reason, it's usually a slow track or it's not done well. And I've heard stories behind the scenes of multiple CFL scouts saying, you know, I'll come to the U Sports East-West Bowl and run your testing and ensure it's to the CFL standard in quality, which in turn will actually help the athletes. And I think in general create more potential excitement, because if we're talking about this prospect in this instance running a 4.6, not a 4.87, that looks better on football in general. So just a tiny bit of advice that when somebody from the pro ranks offers to come for free pro bono and give up their time and run your testing, just like what's going to happen at the Invitational Combine, the CFL Combine, and even having the experience of being at Pro Days in the NFL, mm-hmm. the NFL Combine, I'm talking about the CFL scouts who are willing to go help this, just take them up on it. So when we reference these numbers, there's actually a decent standard there, because I don't feel, it's fair to the athletes to be talking about these numbers when they're not put in a situation to succeed or at least have that quality standard of a test.
And absolutely. And JC will run your zip line. He will have a zip line at the East-West Bowl. You could fly over the field during the game. We'll just suspend it during like punts or like really long passes. We'll have people ziplining across the game. And I will cook the turkey. I will have turkey with gravy, no tofu, no quinoa, just
bruh.
Good old...
Bruh.
You can bring your own dunk. All right. We thank you as always for listening to the 3Down Nation podcast. We'll see you next week for another episode.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.